Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Shepherd and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso, Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
How's everybody this evening?
Okay.
All right.
We're just in a different spot, so it's weird for me.
I know. We've been taken out of our normal routines. The fruits of that labor will be presented next week, so tune in next week for a special interview with a couple of friends of ours about a new play they're producing here in Seattle. But that's next week. This week, let's talk about what's happening at the Comic Extension coming up.
All right. Well, on April 18th is the next event coming up, and we are doing a midnight release of Action Comics 1000. It will be from midnight to 1 a.m. And the best thing about this is that we are celebrating Superman getting his pants back.
Yeah. DC is too. That's actually in the solicit. The trunks are back.
Jeez.
So hashtag trunks are back.
Do y'all get
pants?
So do y'all get to work from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. on that day?
Yeah.
We're here anyway.
Yeah, we do Tuesday night poll for new comic book day. So it's really not much of a stretch for us to stay here, especially to celebrate pants.
Folks, right. Listening, realize that these people work themselves to the bone for your comic book pleasure. We're not joking around here. They put in some late nights.
We have a good time.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a party.
No.
It's part
party. We need to know you suffer.
We descend into madness.
There is madness. There are strange noises that erupt from the store.
All right, you could bet that entire night I'll just be yelling, Solomon Grundy wants pants too.
That's right. It's going to be a good night.
Just so, set up a webcam and Facebook Live that.
Yep. So get, you know, a couple shots of espresso and come on down and celebrate pants on April 18th. April 20th will be our next book club. It'll be a Friday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., where we will be discussing Infinity Gauntlet, because the movie will be out soon, and we need to celebrate Captain America standing up to bullies. Mm-hmm. And then May 5th is Free Comic Book Day, and we are doing Free Comic Book Day all day long from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m.
All day long.
We'll have discounts, special offers, and a fundraiser to put more comics into classrooms and libraries.
Excellent.
And we will have a limited quantity of exclusive Bloody Lying Cat Funko Pops.
Yep.
So you got to be here first, and it's a limit, one per person.
Yep, and Free Comic Book Day, we have a lot of good things that we will be giving away, so the earlier you come in, the better. Do know there will be the most amount of humans that you will ever see in one place.
Yeah.
So if you have social anxiety, you know, just pay that in mind, and, you know, do what you can.
What time do you open on Free Comic Book Day?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.
But the sooner you get here, like, you know, come at 9:30, because if you know, the floodgates are about to burst, we just let it happen.
Keep in mind, we're more afraid of you than you are.
That's right. And more than anything, you will have a very excited Nicole that will be more than happy to get comic books into your hands. So.
Yeah,
I'll be at the register and just move along.
Descending into madness.
I was here last year and it was a fun time.
Yeah, it's
I'd never seen that much activity inside the store before.
Yeah, so you can pay attention to our Facebook page, facebook.com/comicsdungeon, and we post all of our events there. We post our book clubs on our comicsdungeon.com website, so you can always check that out as well under the events tab.
Great. Is that all for the things that are coming up at Comic Extension?
For now.
Yes. All right. Well, speaking of things that you here at the dungeon might be interested in, or maybe you already know about this, and I'm just news to me, Dark Horse is making a few key titles fully returnable for retailers. Now, I know this has been a common complaint amongst the retailers, is that you cannot return stock. Mm-hmm. You have to store what doesn't sell.
Yeah.
And this article by Newsarama says that a few titles, Xerxes, The Fall of the House of Darius and The Rise of Alexander, Aether, Copper Golems or Golems, we'll get into that later, Black Hammer, Age of Doom, Aliens, Dust to Dust, and Blackwood are going to be returnable. It also says that Dark Horse has done this before. Have they done it before?
Yeah. It's not a newish thing. They, for the past couple years, have been doing if you order a bare minimum number, then it's returnable. But not with every title.
Yeah.
And usually just with like the first, maybe first two issues of new titles. So it is good that they're doing it with some of the big ones. Like they didn't necessarily have to do it with Xerxes because it's Frank Miller.
Is that a big seller because of Frank Miller?
Unfortunately, yes. And so it's nice to know that I can just ship those right back off because they're not selling that well.
If I'm not mistaken, that Xerxes has been, what, 10 years in the making?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And it looks like it was drawn in 3 minutes.
Yep.
So
it's Frank Miller.
So, yeah, it sounds like they're expanding it, but they still have, it's not that new of a thing.
Okay.
Well, it also looked like it was lowering the threshold that was required. So it said 10 if you order
10 or more.
So is that low for them?
That's what it always is.
Yeah. Okay. So that's not any lower.
Yeah. That's not any lower.
Yeah. It's mentioned lower threshold, but I didn't know what your numbers were because you're the one looking at the madness of the previews catalog every month.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's usually 10, and sometimes it's nice. It's like, get 10 across any combination of variant covers. Like, okay, that's easy.
That's nice to do.
Is it possible that this could be a trend for other publishers, or do you think Dark Horse is just kind of on their own with this, with being able to return titles?
I think it's mostly just going to be Dark Horse.
Yeah.
A lot of the other publishers have no interest. Marvel said as much last year, the year before, that they sure as heck are never going to do it because they just don't want to take that risk.
Because half their stock would be coming back home to roost.
Well, I think DC learned their lesson, because didn't they do that for...
Convergence.
It was Convergence, and I think they got a whole lot back.
They got a lot back, but it's a messy thing to do, and you have to do it right to also not make retailers angry, so I can understand why they might not want to bother, but it sure would be nice to offload the risk on some of these things.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I can imagine that independent retailers are more on the hook for titles they don't sell than the big publishers. So, I don't understand why Marvel wants to put the risk onto what is essentially their lifeline.
Yeah,
in the market,
they make a lot of weird decisions, especially lately.
Yeah,
and they try to counter and do different things, like. For example, they're trying to push their new relaunch, and they make it like, oh, if you exceed certain orders, then we increase your discount. And it's just like, yeah, it's not a bad thing to do, but I sure would like to just return these.
Right. Well, maybe something that'll create more sales for Marvel is beginning in August, a Fantastic Four is coming back. Is that a happy yay or?
You betcha. Okay. I missed the Fantastic Four. We had a really I felt insightful conversation when they went MIA, and I was like. And I was spouting my typically, paranoid viewpoint of, are they deep six in the Fantastic Four because they don't have the movie rights to them? And Chris made a really valid point, which is, you know what? The series is tired. They've tried to revamp, and they've had some good writers on it, and it's just really tired, and it needs to take a nap for a while. I don't know if those are your exact words, but I think that was a sentiment.
Everybody needs a nap. Sometimes.
Everybody
That's
needs
right.
a nap.
Fantastic Four was getting cranky.
Everybody needs to eat a Snickers once in a while.
And I think that's probably true. I think I was very insightful on Chris's part. And I wish that was true of more books. It's like, yeah, it's not working. X-Men. We should just take a nap for a while.
Wolverine took a nap.
Yeah.
I think they should just call them
dirt nap.
I think they should just call them nap times.
Yeah.
Because the death sales are just a little overdone. But if you just said, it's night time for Power Pack or whatever, and it's like, okay.
Final issue, Wolverine goes night night.
Yes.
Where's his binky, part one?
Would it be more like
he's already wearing a onesie?
He's got booze in the binky.
A dormancy, This is an official dormancy up for this title.
Yeah.
And we're going down for a while, and these characters are going to go off, because Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm went off and joined other groups and did their thing. I didn't really care, but that's fine. But I like that family. Those characters were my friends for a long time, probably as much as the X-Men were. I think I probably had a healthier relationship to the Fantastic Four than the toxic relationship I had with the X-Men.
Marvel teased the return of the Fantastic Four. It was announced by editor-in-chief C.B. Cebulski in a video. The series is going to be written by Dan Slott and drawn by Sarah Pacelli. What other titles have these two worked on? Do you know?
So Dan Slott's been doing Spider-Man for like 10 years now, but he did She-Hulk, which was fantastic. And he did a Thing series, a Ben Grimm series that I really loved because it ended with his bar mitzvah. and it was really good.
So I didn't realize the Thing was only 13.
Oh. am I mixing up celebrations? He did something Jewish.
Okay.
He celebrated it.
I think bar is male and bat is female, but you can correct us by emailing us.
he had some sort of celebration at the end of the series. But and he's had a lot of experience with those characters, so I actually am looking forward to him doing it. Mm-hmm. Sarah did some Ultimate Spider-Man.
She worked on a lot of Miles Morales stuff. She was a big chunk on the Ultimate stuff, and she also followed Bendis over through the different iterations of Miles post him coming into 616, you know, the regular Earth as opposed to the alternate Earth. Multiverses. Yeah. So she's a really solid artist.
Awesome.
So she will be really good for that title.
Cool. Yeah. Dan Slott says he's going to be writing at least 55 issues of Fantastic Four, which should get the heroes to number 700. So, and Captain America is going to reach 700 in April, and allegedly so.
Relaunch back to number one.
Yay!
Yeah. And just FYI, that Coats series hasn't been offered yet. It'll probably be offered next month because we're getting towards the end of this Captain America run with Wade. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. So, yeah, new Fantastic Four. Are we, do we imagine that it's going to be a big seller?
I think it will do very well for us right off the bat, and then it'll settle into some basic lower numbers. But it just kind of depends because all of Marvel's down for us.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this might be the first part of a nice rise on some of their numbers.
That would be good.
If they can maintain that, that would be fantastic. So I think initially it will, because how long has it been since a published Fantastic Four?
Probably 3 years.
Secret Wars.
Pre-Secret Wars.
Pre-Secret Wars.
Did they cancel it before?
I think there was a little post.
It was a countdown. I thought it was a countdown to the cancellation that overlapped with the release of the Secret Wars, the first issue.
I think if it lasted after Secret Wars, it didn't last long.
It definitely
or,
didn't.
Yeah, I know it pretty much went like flat dead after that.
Because Reed was missing right after that.
Yeah, so it's around the Secret Wars event.
So 3 years?
I think three years, because we've had two other terrible events that could not compare.
It's one of the big...
And one awful movie.
Yeah. It's one of the big core titles like that, Legion of Superheroes and Justice Society, that have just been missing in action for quite some time. So there is a big fan base just waiting for it.
Cool.
And I bet you it'll open the floodgates to Marvel, the cinematic universe, and making some announcements. Because they will take that opportunity to make more money if they can.
Yeah. A lot of people thought that Marvel was republishing the Fantastic Four because maybe they got the movie rights back from Fox. There's no indication of that. But it's not improbable that they've worked out with Fox the same deal that they have with Sony and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So we might see a new Marvel-helmed Fantastic Four movie in the future.
Or at the very least, them just taking some of the characters out of the portfolio and getting them. Because they need somebody after Thanos, and I'm really hoping for Doctor Doom.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Right now, if you are feeling that you are excited about this Fantastic Four, you should go to your local comic book store and pick up Marvel 2-in-1. It's written by Chip Zdarsky. It's really fun. It's following Johnny and the Thing as they are trying to find... the Richards family. I'm happy that CB on the video that we saw, which you can watch on YouTube on the Marvel page, that Chip is going to keep writing it. I don't know for how long, but I was glad to hear because I thought that they were just going to lead up into the Dan Slott stuff in August and then he would get canceled. Now, he didn't say he's going to go 15 issues or something like that, you know. But I definitely recommend picking up that title. I think that's a really solid title. I look very much forward to it every single month, and I can't tell you that I do that with most of my titles.
How long has it been running?
Four-ish.
Yeah, I think it's been running for about 4 months now. So maybe it started in January.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because the original Marvel 2-in-1, that was one of my gateway books into the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I mean, as a kid, I felt like, well, I can't get caught up with everything else, but hey, this book has got like Ben Grimm and then mm-hmm. some other cool supporting or some second tier and sometimes first tier hero. So yeah, that was one of my gateway books, and that was in Marvel team up.
Yeah, and the arcs are usually 1 to 2 issues yeah. tops, and yeah. they're really fun. And yeah, there was some weird like vampire in New York Black Panther one or something, or Brother Voodoo or something.
It wasn't always Ben Grimm and?
Well, it's Ben Grimm and.
Yes.
And like Brother Voodoo was there and stuff like that. So there's a lot of fun stuff in that title. And I think that they keep that sort of feeling alive in the current one, but it still has a very modern take and a streamlined continuity. Good monster show up, some good mole man moments and stuff. So I highly recommend picking that up if you're feeling the itch for the Fantastic Four.
Cool. Marvel 2-in-1, check it out at your local comic shop.
That's right.
All right, moving on. Quite a while ago, Tim Burton had the green light by DC and Warner Brothers to direct a new Superman adaptation. And Superman Lives. And Nicolas Cage was attached to the project. And there's a great picture of Nick Cage with this long, stringy hair wearing the prototype Superman suit. It never got off the ground. For a number of reasons, which I'm not going to go into right now because I don't have them in front of me, but I saw some really great news this week, and that's Nicolas Cage is finally going to get his dream of playing Superman. He's going to voice Superman in the new Teen Titans Go to the Movies. He'll join fellow New Edition's Halsey, who plays Wonder Woman, and Lil Yachty, who plays Green Lantern. So, yeah, Cage has been a long-time Superman fan.
I think there's actually a documentary about that.
Yeah, it was like film. Kickstarted or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I think it was called The Death of Superman Lives. Does that sound right?
Familiar.
Because if you go to YouTube, there are actually some cool pre-production stuff because they were going to make Superman more of an alien. He was going to be more electrical powered. And there were some costume tests with, Tesla coil type costumes. What do you call it with the electric bolts?
There's also an urban legend that Nicolas Cage got plastic surgery for this role, which we spoke about before in the show. None of this is substantiated. So
I am very much looking forward to this Teen Titans cartoon on its own merits.
Really good.
It looks pretty great.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Nick Cage is one of those like eccentric Hollywood guys that you just, they're just lovable goofs. And like, he bought an island once and then went bankrupt and had to sell the island.
He used to own Action Comics #1.
Sold for $2.1 million.
But wasn't there some hoopla around it being quote unquote stolen? Do you remember this?
I don't know. But the article that we read for this just said that he sold it for $2.1 million. Okay. Yeah. So figured he made his money and hopefully that's.
Yeah. I thought there was some insurance possible
paid for the island
scam that happened. But.
All right, so good on you, Nicolas Cage. We're pulling for you.
Yeah. Just better than Ghost Rider.
Do good by Superman.
Yeah, do good by Superman.
I just want him to steal the Declaration of Independence. So.
Moving on, there are some news today there's some news this past week that the success of Black Panther is spurring demand for African comics. And this is really good news to read. You don't, often when you're looking at the news cycle, you're like, oh man, that's depressing. But this is, since Black Panther was released, there've been more demand for African-centric comics. There's one called Kwezi, I don't know how to pronounce it, by Loiso Mkize.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I know, right? Loiso Mkize, about a South African superhero who battles baddies in Gold City, a proxy for Johannesburg. So, do we have any, have you had customers come into the show asking for comics like Afrofuturism type comics?
I've not. Have you?
No, we've mostly had people looking for Black Panther material.
Yeah. Not trying to branch out, just going right to the source.
I mean, some people have asked for, people of color comics and things
right.
like that, but not necessarily superhero. I mean, when I read this article, I went way too deep into trying to find more Afrofuturism comics. Oh, it fell. Because I've been loving that genre for a really long time. And so I found something, unless somebody else has something else to add before
Bring
we go
it.
Into it. Okay. So I know that I had found some Kickstarter for some Afrofuturism comic, and I found this one back in 2016. It's Johansi, and it was created by Paul Louise Julie, and he made a Kickstarter back in 2016 that he got funded and made a two-part series of this this title, and it's a he calls it an African space opera, and it kind of mixes, like, the plot mixes elements of, like, Aladdin and Star Wars. It's like the way I can describe it. And he's made, like, this whole world via comic books. You can get it digitally, or you can get it, like, through his main website. And now he's did a Kickstarter earlier this year to try to make a movie, an animated movie out of it. He did not meet his goal. So his initial goal was $60,000.
Wow.
He made it to $9,600. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do a stretch goal of $300,000 because he's got this whole world and all these different characters, and he wanted to make multiple movies within the universe. And it looks really cool, but that was a steep goal. So now he has an Indiegogo as of April 2nd that goes through April 22nd. And he got some investors interested, but they wanted him to raise $10,000 by crowdfunding. So that's still going on through April 22nd. So if you guys want to check it out and see what this is about, or maybe order your own, you can go to Midas Monkey with two E's instead of a Y.com/collection/printedbooks.
Monkey also, like the band.
Yeah. Hey, hey, we're the Monkeys. You can also go to our digital retail store and look up Johansi and buy it through us. And that's comicsengine.comicretailer.com. And that opens up our digital store. You'll see our little emblem there in the corner, and you can buy digital comics, and we get a little profit off of that, which is really nice.
I'll repost the Kickstarter.
I'll give you guys all that stuff and the Indiegogo page.
Because I watched the video today and it was fascinating.
It's really cool. Now, the thing is I went to the MidasMonkey.com and looked at all of the different books that he's made, and I think there's a lot of different artists on there, and some of it is super realistic. Some of it looks really cool and, like, kind of European sci-fi almost with the art. And then some of it's kind of ghostly and weird and looks kind of photoshopped and stuff. So it's like kind of all over the place artistically. But the concepts and what he's doing is very intriguing to me, and it makes me want to check it out. So if I can get my hands on it, I'll definitely review it in the future. He's definitely trying to ride the wave of the Black Panther stuff. And I think that there is a draw there. You just need to get to the people that are going to fund that. You know, that's always the biggest thing. I mean, we just did a fundraiser for Black Panther, and getting picked up by a news network really helped us to be able to achieve that goal for students to go see the Black Panther movie. So that's why I wanted to mention it on this show. It's something really interesting and cool, and I personally have a stake in wanting to see more Afrofuturistic comics.
Yeah. That's great. Are there any other... any other notables you have on your list there?
I said a lot of words.
You did say a lot of words.
Yeah, I tried to trim it down.
It's your time, Nicole.
All right, well.
But I just wanted to mention that, and, like, definitely scour the internet, because I'm sure people are making their own stuff online and we're just not seeing it in print yet.
Yeah. Right.
But that Kickstarter we've talked about before is a good way for publishers to see things and maybe pick it up. I know this guy, Paul, is not particularly interested in having comics be his focus. I think he wants to do digital media movies. So that's his ultimate goal. But in the meantime, comics are a good medium for it.
Yeah. Black Panther is breaking box office records all over the place, and according to Variety.com, it's set to break Saudi Arabia's 35-year cinema ban. Disney and its Middle East distribution partner Italia Film will be releasing the Marvel superhero blockbuster April 18th in a new AMC-branded movie theater in Riyadh with a gala premiere. First time, it'll mark the first screening of a film release in the kingdom since movie theaters were banned in the early 1980s.
Wow.
Yeah, so it keeps going.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all the news we're going to talk about today, friends. Let's move on to Book Report. And Chris Cassell, let's start with you.
So I do not have my book with me because I was so happy about it and shared it with the customer that I didn't think was going to buy it. And then she was just like, yeah, I'll get it now. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I want money. So I did copy the information down and I'll just... you guys won't have any visual aid over here. It's called My Love Story, Volume 1, and it is written by Kazune Kawahara and art by Aruko. And one thing I got to say, it's very lovely how in the back of the book, both of them are just like, I am honored to be able to work with this other person. They both just continually do that. This book was delightful.
So good.
It brought tears of joy to my eye. And
just the one?
Just one because you all man.
Yes. So here's the quick description, the solicit. Takeo Goda is a giant guy with a giant heart. Too bad the girls don't want him. They want his good-looking best friend, Sunakawa. Used to being on the sidelines, Takeo simply stands tall and accepts his fate. But one day, when he saves a girl named Yamato from a harasser on the train, his love life suddenly takes an incredible turn. Takeo can hardly believe it when his path crosses with her again, and he finds himself falling in love with her. But with handsome Sunakawa around, does he even stand a chance? So it is part of Shonen Beat, and it is a romance book, and it is so good.
It's so cute. It's got so much comedy and so much heart.
So the main character is like this big lug of a guy.
Eyebrows for days,
yeah,
too.
Very, very like kind of ugly old man face for a teenager at times. And but he is like pure of heart. He is like the greatest person.
Yes.
And every time... like he tries to tell a girl at the end of the school year that he has a crush on them, they go tell his best friend, and the best friend is like, I don't like you, go away. And the whole story is kind of revealing like the levels of their friendship, and everybody in this book is willing to sacrifice something to make their friends happy and loved. And it's just so heartwarming throughout the book. It's got great art, great facial expressions, and great comedic timing. And there's a manga, or there's an anime, and I'm going to have to find it.
It is on Hulu. I did check last night, so you can look at it on Hulu. I don't know if it's on Crunchyroll or Amazon Prime. But,
gotcha.
Yeah.
This is all part of our manga book club going on right now, but this isn't...
Our community is growing too.
It's just a very fantastic story. And if you actually just want a feel good book that's not like forced in any way, this is one of my favorites. So it's My Love Story by Kazune Kawahara and Aruko.
And I think we have like 13 more volumes to go too.
Yeah, and we've ordered a handful of volume ones because it will be my quest to make most of you read this.
Yeah, probably me too. So you're welcome in advance.
All right, cool. My Love Story, Volume 1. Thank you, Chris. Nicole, let's move on to you. What do you want to tell us about?
So the thing I've been waiting my whole life for is Isola. I'm just kidding. That was a little hyperbole.
Not really. Not really.
Not really. So this is a new image title by Brendan Fletcher, who worked on Motor Crush, and Carl Kerschel, who worked on...
Carl?
Who worked on, what is it called? Gotham Academy. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got caught up in Carl.
And also the webcomic The Abominable Charles Christopher.
Yes.
Which is great if you get a chance.
Yes. So these people are an amazing team. I think Brendan Fletcher has done animation. So what he brings to the table with Motor Crush, all the fluidity and movement with the racing and everything, he also brings to the table here. And there was... I'm going to tell you about it in a second, but there was a prologue that was in the back of Motor Crush, and I think it ended up being like maybe 10 pages total of story. And it does give you a bit of context going into this. So I read it with some of the prologue in my brain, and Chris read it with none of it in his brain and got like a different thing from it. Mm-hmm. It's very beautifully illustrated. It opens up, there's a tiger and a warrior girl, and they seem to be trekking across a world. They're trying to get to a legend land called Isola. the girl is talking to the tiger, who's black with these blue stripes, very striking. Keeps talking to the tiger like, Your Majesty, oh, I'm so sorry, and all that kind of stuff, while she's trying to bring her through this very dangerous, treacherous land. And I know some things about the tiger, but people who read this may not know because of that pesky prologue. So there's not like too much story. You're just getting a little glimpses of this world, and you don't know why they're traveling to this land. You know, they came from this city called Mara, and obviously there's going to be a lot more coming. And so I kind of call it the slow burn fantasy tale. It's really just visually beautiful, stunning colors, really gorgeous layouts. It's something that I almost wish they put in a graphic novel just so I could consume more of it faster. But I think that if they can keep on a monthly track, this can be a really interesting build. And there's a lot to this world, and I can't wait to find out more. So
I bought a copy of this when I walked into the shop tonight, because Chris does his presentational opening of the book as if it's a sacred, sacred item.
Yeah,
and he basically
right.
just says, look at this book. Nicole just lost her mind over it. And I look at him, I'm like, are you showing it to me, or do you want me to buy it? He's like, you should buy it. So, boom, I will read it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Chris's voodoo doesn't usually work on me that way, but this time.
Really?
No, I resist. Don't look at me that way.
He knew the buttons tonight.
Yeah.
Nicole's,
no.
I went Nicole's to my head shrinker last puddle. Night.
I've got all, I'm
puddle?
Open to all kinds of things right now.
Yeah.
Not many
yeah.
people can resist.
Yeah, so I'm super into this book. If you
That's
walk
gorgeous.
Into the store, yeah. I'm probably going to hand you a copy.
We're running out of copies right now.
And then I'm going to put them on order for you.
All right.
Yes, so Isola, pick up a copy as soon as possible.
Great. Thanks, Nicole.
Done. Yeah.
All right, finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got?
Well, I need to talk about the final installment of Steve Niles and Bernie Wrightson's Frankenstein Alive, and this is going to be really hard for me to talk about. As many of you know, Bernie Wrightson died last year after struggling with a brain tumor. This book, this is the fourth installment, the final issue of a series that started from IDW in 2012.
That sounds about
2014.
Right.
2014. It's been 4 or 6 years since it started.
12 and, or 13 sounds right to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and this truly, whether it was intentional or not, was going to be Bernie Wrightson's magnum opus. You know, he's drawn a lot of work since the horror comics he did in the 60s and 70s. He's done superhero stuff. He's done Spider-Man. He's done Hulk things. He's done Batman things. His own character, Captain Stern. But it just never had the inspiration that a grim and gritty EC-style horror comic would bring for him. And the detail that he put into the first four issues of Frankenstein Alive was phenomenal. If you've ever had the opportunity to read the adaptation that he did in the 70s of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, mm-hmm. The detail in it is mind-boggling.
It's gorgeous.
Absolutely mind-boggling. And he was putting that kind of detail into this book. Oh, and Niles was telling a kind of interesting story as well, because it's a direct sequel to the Shelley story of what has become of the monster and still trying to find his way through the world. So I frankly was surprised that they managed to put this together for this fourth issue together for release upon Bernie's death. And apparently he'd actually handpicked Kelly Jones to complete the story, to complete the illustrations. So Bernie drew page 1, 2, 8, 10, and 11, and the cover, and then Kelly Jones drew 3 to 7, 9, 12 to 19. And it's very obvious who drew what, and that's okay. But of all the comic book illustrators in the universe who clearly borrowed from or were inspired by Bernie Wrightson, it's got to be Kelly Jones. And he's done his best in his own right to create his own style. But every time you look at even his contemporary work, you go, Bernie. And that's not a bad thing. But what was hard about reading this book is that the pages that Kelly Jones did look really rushed. And I know that they were trying to be mindful of not detracting from what was there of Wrightson's work, but there are some pages that are, I hesitate to say, almost amateurish looking and really frustrating to look at. And I really wish that Jones would just have gone for it and done his level of detail, his level of work, because you go from a page that is Bernie, that has the emotional impact that Bernie was always capable of, and then it's a paler impact when we look at Jones's pages, and it just made me kind of sad, because I wish that Jones had not pulled himself back and just sort of celebrated that which Bernie had always inspired him to do.
See, Jones in the past 2 to 3 years has over-Jonesed himself, if that makes sense.
Sure.
He's gone too far over the edge of stylizing
of course
to himself. So I saw this as him muting that, and I thought that was the only way it would be acceptable for this project.
Okay, fair enough. But I do feel it was rushed, because if you look at some of the pages, you can actually see the blue lines in it. And that to me is like incomplete work. You can see the blue pencils. What do I know?
Was there a reason for them to get this title out at a certain date?
That was a good question. That was a question I had too. Surely they want to compile it in, a trade or hardbound edition, probably have lots of extras and sketches and make it into a really cool package. Maybe it's inevitable that you would be disappointed by something like this, but honestly, I felt like I was watching Game of Death with Bruce Lee, when they just took the surviving moments of this incomplete Bruce Lee film, and they cobbled it together and they put it into another film in order to make a package of it. And I don't mean to insult Mr. Jones, but I feel very strongly that he could have done a better tribute to the man who inspired him.
A lot of pressure.
Absolutely.
Those are big shoes to fill.
Yeah, yeah, and I can't knock him for that. But, at the same time, guys, he's been doing it for his whole career. doing it his whole career. Anyway,
cool.
It is worth picking up. If you've not ever read any of the earlier issues, you are in for an astounding treat. And yeah, I'm grateful that they completed the series. And I'm sad that we've lost Bernie Wrightson, because it was a tremendous loss. And maybe this is how I'm processing my grief.
It does have a beautiful cover.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Cole. Frankenstein Alive, Alive. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time, but before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Or send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, it's time for quiz time. Get your quiz hats on. This week, the questions come to us from me.
Yay.
All right, so we talked about the ill-fated Superman Lives movie that was going to be directed by Tim Burton, starring Nicolas Cage. Here are 5 other superhero movies that famously or infamously never made it to film. In 2007, while Christopher Nolan was hard at work on Batman Begins, Warner Brothers was planning a parallel Justice League movie, complete with its own Batman, called Justice League Mortal. Warner Brothers hired this director, gave him $220 million, and sent him to Australia to cast the film. Justice League Mortal was all set to film, but then the writer strike happened, Australia pulled its tax incentives, and Warner Brothers ultimately pulled the plug. Who was the director who came this close to jumpstarting the DCEU in a very different way?
The Mad Max guy.
I know Cole knows this one.
The Babe in the City guy.
Martin? No, not Martin. I always confuse him. It's a George, right?
George.
George.
Y'all are so close. George Miller is correct.
George Miller.
I mean, my favorite movie, and I even like. Anyway, I rant about this movie all the time. I ranted at the last panel.
But you haven't done it recently, so it's just not fresh. That's all.
All right. Number 2. Speaking of Batman. Years before Christian Bale donned the cowl, Warner Brothers hired Requiem for a Dream director Darren Aronofsky to helm an adaptation of this Batman title by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli.
Year one?
It is Batman Year One. Warner Brothers pulled the plug after 2 years of development in fear of oversaturating the market. And remember, this is well before the start of the MCU.
Oh, wow.
Number three.
We would have made everybody a heroin addict anyway.
Number three, Pi. Darren Aronofsky's Pi is one of my favorite films.
It's one of my favorite as well.
Speaking of how Warner Brothers likes the green light and then cancels superhero movies, in 2005, Warner Brothers agreed to let this director bring Wonder Woman to the silver screen, an agreement that came to an end when Warner Brothers and said director could not come to an agreement on the kind of movie to make. Although, if unconfirmed reports are true about Wonder Woman fighting vampires, I have to side with Warner Brothers on this one.
Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon is correct. Joss eventually went on to direct 2012's Avengers, and I made that whole thing up about vampires.
Oh, but it was a great clue.
Number four. It was a clue. For a brief time in 2007, Marvel had an agreement to make a movie starring this Sorcerer Supreme, written by Neil Gaiman and directed by Guillermo del Toro. Doctor Strange. Del Toro is famous for overbooking himself and had to bow out of the project, and Gaiman left because he didn't want to work with anybody else. Excellent. The whole endeavor lasted only a few months.
Wow.
Finally, number five, Iron Man took about 18 years to get to the big screen, jumpstarting the MCU as we know it today in 2008. In the late 90s, the rights were owned by 20th Century Fox, who had already penciled in Tom Cruise to star as Tony Stark, and were in deep discussions with this Pulp Fiction auteur to write and direct it.
Tarantino?
Quentin Tarantino.
Seriously?
Tarantino turned it down, and
you're
several weeks. I am not. Tarantino turned it down, and several weeks later, Fox sold the rights back to Marvel, not seeing any promise.
Thank God! Wow.
All right,
wow.
That is
his hands on Star Trek.
That is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.